Hello and welcome to another Premier League preview podcast exclusively for you guys here on Patreon. As ever, I'm joined by Lewis Ambrose. Hello, Lewis.
Hello, Andrew. How's it going?
It's going okay. How has your football week been?
My football week? I'm trying to remember now. Oh, it was good fun. I watched Arsenal and Dortmund both go through in their respective cup competitions, and then watched Bayern Munich lose 5-0 on Wednesday night, and saw looking at my phone while that was in the second half, saw that Manchester City were heading towards penalties, and they ended up going out the cup as well. So that's been quite nice. And then obviously I've barely just stopped laughing at Manchester United.
Well, yes, this is true. This is true. I mean, what the hell happened to Bayern Munich? Just one of those crazy nights?
Yeah, I think one of those weird games when, you know, the Gladbach seemed to be sort of their bogey side, and they drew with them on the opening day of the season, and they're pretty much the only team in Germany, I think, that play Bayern with a bit of a fuck it attitude. And
right.
Like you know, they get the ball and three or four players race forward, and everybody else is a little bit too scared. But then I just kind of think, well, everyone else loses 5-0 anyway, so why not lose 5-0 with men out of position instead of men behind the ball? So they sort of approached the game like that, and they scored in the first 90 seconds, and Bayern didn't have their manager, Nagelsmann, because he was sat at home watching it with coronavirus.
Right.
So it was a little bit of a perfect storm, I think. But still funny nonetheless.
Well, of course, yes. When a team like, I was going to say Manchester United, but I do conflate the two. Yeah, well, I conflate the two in my mind. You know, to me, Bayern are very much the Manchester United of Germany, even though I don't know if that's necessarily true, but it feels quite true to me. And, you know, as long as I decide that in my own mind, it remains true and nobody can convince me otherwise.
No, I'd go with that as well. You know, the pompous entitlement and... You know, the team that everybody loves to hate, really.
Is it basically anyone but Bayern for everybody else in Germany?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good. We're glad at that, and we're glad at Manchester United getting beaten and all the rest of it. So, from an Arsenal perspective, a reasonably okay week, considering that, you know, we made a lot of changes in the Carabao Cup, kept a clean sheet, scored a couple of goals, went through to the next round. When is the draw of that? Is when? Today? Saturday
morning, for some reason. I have no idea why it wasn't just...
This is the kind of thing that used to happen in the old days, where they had, like, the draw would be on Saint and Greavesy on Saturday morning on ITV, and they would get bizarre people to do it. I think that big orange wanker Donald Trump even did it at one point, did the draw for the League Cup.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So, who knows what they're going to do tomorrow.
They used to do it. And then they used to do it as well on Soccer Saturday, I think, didn't they? Before the 3 o'clock games
kicked off
a while. Yeah, I don't know why they don't just do it after the last games played on Wednesday. Mm. But there you go.
So we're all looking for Sunderland in the next round, basically.
Yeah, at home.
Of course, that'd be another good evening out and a chance to rotate, whereas I think if you get any of the other teams, you've got to be a lot more serious. But I suppose when you get to the quarterfinals, you're going to be quite serious about a competition regardless of who you play.
Yeah, especially when we don't have Europe and all those extra games, and it's, you know, we've got pretty much most weeks we've got a week off between matches, so it doesn't come with quite the same... an apparel of getting an injury that we usually have when we have these cup games. And it's really, especially when we used to be in the Champions League and you'd have to sort of play the first team in all of those European group stage games as well. The only shame, I guess, is that it means if more first team players or senior players are fit, then it means we don't get so much of the younger players coming in and getting to play.
Yeah, well, I don't think we've really had that in this competition anyway this season. You know, there's been... a little bit of it, but not very much, even the other day.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, it's not been part of Mikel Arteta's thinking. I think he really is, if not necessarily targeting this, because I think we need to do a lot more this season than win the Carabao Cup. You know, not saying that we're going to, but I think we would need to do more than that, and, you know, win the Carabao Cup and finish 8th or 10th again. And, you know, that's not going to convince anyone that you're going in the right direction. But he is... quite wedded to the idea that the senior players are going to play in this competition. So, you know, there was a couple on the bench on Tuesday night who didn't get on, Balogun and Salahuddin, who didn't get a chance to get on because of the subs rule. But I don't really envisage too much more of that, depending or regardless of who we get in the next round. Anyone in particular stick out for you on Tuesday night? Any of the players who came in, did they catch your eye in any significant way?
I'm always very happy to see Eddie Nketiah score goals. There's something about Eddie Nketiah that I really enjoy seeing him score goals, which is something that he does really, really well. I enjoyed that his first two touches were so difficult and he took them so brilliantly, and then the finish was absolutely terrible after he'd done, you know, the really hard bit.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's time to wonder if Ainsley Maitland-Niles should at least be ahead of Mohamed Elneny as the next central midfielder in the squad. That's something for Mikel Arteta to think about.
I think he is. No, because when we've had when we've had to put on a player in the final stages of games, you know, when he took Lokonga off against Villa, it was Maitland-Niles went on. So
that's true.
I do think he is there. I thought he had a good game the other night. I have to say, I was impressed with what he did in midfield. There was one moment where he almost broke through on goal. The pace that he has, he's quite deceptive in that regard.
Yeah, he's, without having the height, he has that sort of speed that you associate with like lanky players with their long legs. Like, he has the legs, these long skinny legs, but then he doesn't look that tall. So the way that, I don't know, like Patrick Vieira used to obviously stride away from people, he doesn't look like he should be able to do that, but then he does. With him and Emile Smith Rowe, we're just now producing player after player who doesn't look that fast, but actually is when they start moving.
Yeah, here's a quote. We've got a few questions from the Discord before we start talking about Leicester and what we might do. Lefty Righty says, Ben White, injury sickness. Tomiyasu at centre-back and Ainsley maintained tiles. I don't know if that's autocorrect or just something else. But he said Maitland-Niles at right-back. Any thoughts on that? We saw Cedric in there on Tuesday, and Callum Chambers came off the bench. But in the absence of Ben White, there was another question, by the way, from M.M. Walton 13, who said, with Ben White potentially out with sickness, do you think Rob Holding could fill in and produce some of the line-breaking runs White normally provides to the side? And my initial thought on that is absolutely not. Not that Rob Holding can't fill in, but the runs. But then I remember texting James in the opening 20 minutes of the game on Tuesday night and saying something along the lines of, Rob Holding's really trying to show that he can do some of that forward running because he did quite a bit of it in the opening stages of that game.
Yeah, firstly, Ainsley maintained tiles would be a great name if he ends up, you know, going into DIY and homeware or something after his playing career.
Yeah.
I spoke to Elliot about this on Twitter during the game, I think, when Ben White went off the other night. And I'm sort of against moving Tomiyasu to centre-back because I think the defence, and you always want to have a settled defence where possible, and making two changes rather than one when one, you know, is necessary. Making two changes sort of is a little bit too much for me if you don't have to make them.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's not that I don't think Tomiyasu could play at centre-back. He obviously plays there for Japan. I just would not like to see us have a brand new centre-back partnership and have to put someone else in at right-back at the same time. So personally, I'd go for Rob Holding or for Callum Chambers. I don't think personally that there's that much between those two players. I'd go for one of those at centre-back in Ben White's place if he can't make it. If you want those sort of runs off the ball, a little bit more of that, then Chambers is maybe even the better option than Rob Holding to provide a little bit of that in the team. I would be quite happy to see, you know, Rob Holding play, and Rob Holding play as Rob Holding and not try and do an impression of Ben White, but whoever plays, play their game.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. I think you can fall into a trap of saying, well, look, Ben White has come in and he's done this, so we need somebody to come in and, like you say, do an impression of Ben White. You know, I don't know that that's possible. It's not like Rob Holding could come in and do an impression of David Luiz. I mean, he could have tried to give away a few more penalties, I suppose.
But I was going to say, maybe that's not such a bad thing.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, so I think you have to look to offset the weakness that exists in the absence of somebody else in a different way. Now, I think Mikel Arteta has got a bit of form for this kind of thing in terms of overthinking it, if you like, because we saw what happened last year when Kieran Tierney was out and he put Granit Xhaka at left back, and that then meant that we had to do, well, all kinds of things, because Xhaka at left back couldn't get forward, so you needed to drop somebody else into the left midfield role and blah, 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 blah. And that was a classic case of overthinking it for me. So Rob Holding for Ben White or Callum Chambers for Ben White is, if not like for like, directly because of how they play, you've got a right-footed centre-back alongside a left-footed centre-back, and that's, you know, pretty much as you can ask.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, we didn't play well, and there's no getting away from it, but we kept a lot of clean sheets last season with Rob Holding playing almost every game. So it's not like, you know, we're doomed if he goes in Ben White's place. It's not like a massive issue.
Yeah, Marty says, we haven't lost since Xhaka got injured. Is that coincidence?
We haven't. It's true. I mean, I think it is. We obviously played really well against Spurs with him on the pitch, and we were playing Chelsea and Man City before his suspension. So
yeah.
I think it's a little bit of a coincidence, really. But I don't begrudge anyone reading into little things like that.
Puerto Rican Gooner says, do you stick with Lacazette at the 10-ish role or start Odegaard in that position instead? And I'm sort of curious as to your thoughts on this, because we didn't have a chance to talk about it. It was one of the things maybe that we discussed, I can't remember, from the preview podcast last week, where the idea, you know, that Lacazette had an impact when he came on against Crystal Palace. The idea that he might start him, we weren't sure about that, you know, from the point of view that if he did, generally it means that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang plays on the left, and we didn't want to see that.
No.
But that's not what happened, and Lacazette played well against Aston Villa for, you know, for the 60 or 70 minutes that he's got in the tank. So were you a little bit surprised that when Lacazette came in, it didn't necessarily mean Aubameyang shifting off to that left-hand side?
Yeah, I was. We did talk about that, and I was. And I was also very pleasantly surprised at his performance playing. Yeah, I think I also said that I didn't think last year when we tried it a couple of times he played very well in that position, or that it helped the team at least. And he did play really, really well against Aston Villa, I thought. One of the other things we talked about was sort of playing a lot of bodies in the middle. We talked about having that not playing the Smith Rowe, Odegaard and Partey central midfield to get, you know, an extra defensive body, because Villa do play with the two strikers and the three central midfielders and really pack the middle of the pitch. So I think, you know, Leicester as well have been playing with a back three, so I expect to see something similar. Where was Odegaard in midweek?
He had a bit of an injury, apparently, so he couldn't play. I wonder if he was maybe a late dropout, which is why the young kid came in to the squad. I think they were planning on playing Odegaard, but they had to play Smith Rowe then because he wasn't available. He's in the training pictures, so, you know, you assume he's fit. But I think there is an element to which Mikel Arteta leans on, is that the right word, a sort of recency, because he talked about Lacazette after the Palace game, or he talked about Lacazette after the Palace game in the build-up to the Villa game, if that makes sense, and he said, I saw what he did in that game, and there and then I was thinking, you know, I'm going to play him in the next game. So after a couple of relatively indifferent performances from Odegaard in the previous two games, Lacazette's come in. He's had a very positive contribution, I think. Maybe it's been overplayed just a little bit, but no taking away from the impact that he had. I reckon he'll stick with that. I mean, do you think Leicester, who have been playing with a back three, will look at the way Arsenal played against Aston Villa playing with a back three and maybe think, We might have to do something a little bit different here. Or can they execute playing with a back three against Arsenal, doing what they're doing more successfully than Villa, who had to change it at halftime to deal?
Yeah, I think that's the bigger question. I thought we were good, really good, but I also thought Villa were really poor. And I think Leicester will, if they want to play their way, I don't think that Leicester will go into the game thinking that, you know, we were so unstoppably good and Villa had nothing to do with it. I think they'll go into the game thinking that they can play, but do it better than Villa did. You know, especially Villa just left the flanks completely open for the two wing backs, and I expect to see Leicester give a lot more support if it's, you know, with a wider player, or if it's someone off the front line dropping off and drifting wide. I expect to see them to give a lot more support out wide. Yeah, I would be surprised if Brendan Rodgers, who is another manager who can overthink things, but is also a manager who really sticks to his ideas when they're working.
Mm.
I think that's for a long time, and certainly at Liverpool, was his biggest problem. Is Liverpool would go on spectacular runs of form under Rodgers and look like the best team in the country. They'd win 7 or 8 games in a row, or 7 out of 10 or something like that. And then they'd lose, but then he'd stick with the same plan because he definitely thought his plan was really good. But then teams had figured it out, and it was like he was always, you know. And then when he would rebuild and get another plan, strike another idea, and that would work again for 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 games. And then he was always too slow to change it. So I think the fact that Leicester have started the season so poorly, and now they're playing with the back three and winning games and winning, you know, I mean, we all had a big laugh at Manchester United last weekend, but the weekend before that, it's still not easy to beat Man United, and you still have to play well. And Leicester did beat them, scored 4 against them.
Yeah.
And then beat Brentford, which we've seen is a really, really tough place to go to this season. And we lost there, Liverpool drew there, the Chelsea got away with it to win there. And Leicester went and won there last weekend. So I think, you know, it's been working what they've been doing the last few weeks. I'd be very surprised if Rodgers changed it for us. I don't think we're good enough for managers to change things that are working for them because they're playing Arsenal this weekend.
I mean, we did have a good result there last season. You know, we beat them 3-1, I think, in February. I'm just trying to...
And we conceded in like the second minute of the game.
I'm trying to remember the game now. Let me have a look here.
We let in a goal in like the first couple of minutes, and
Tielemans,
the equaliser.
Yeah.
Was it David Luiz? Was it the equaliser that he scored?
Oh, was that the famous Willian assist? Was that the header?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we scored a couple quite close together, maybe. I mean, I think that. Do you see similarities between Arsenal and Leicester? I mean, everyone talks about Leicester as, look, they've done really well the last couple of seasons, but ultimately fallen short from positions where they should absolutely have secured Champions League football. They've fallen apart in the final stages of the season. I know we look at their form and we look at, you know, the last couple of results against Manchester United and Brentford, but very good. But they went 4 games without a win. You know, they lost to Man City, which, look, that's no shame. They were beaten by Brighton. They drew with Burnley. They drew with Crystal Palace. And again, you know, that's a result that I think we as Arsenal fans can identify with. I think we're on level points in the table with Leicester, both teams on 14 points. So I think we're looking at two teams that are pretty well evenly matched.
Yeah, and I was talking to Elliot this week on one of the Arsenal Vision podcasts, and one of the things he asked myself and Clive was about, you know, if Man United are you know, going to stick with Solskjaer and it really costs them, then is there an opening for top four, and what does that mean, and are Arsenal good enough? And I think there's a group of teams that aren't really good enough to be in the top four, but because there's just a group of them, if Man United do keep fucking up, one of them will end up in the top four. I'm thinking West Ham are probably looking like the best side there, I think, at the moment. But I think European football will will pay a price in the end, and when we get to the winter and Christmas and, you know, they don't have a massive squad. I think that, you know, us and Leicester are probably the next two teams around there at the moment. Brighton obviously started the season really well, as did Brentford. I don't think Tottenham are very good at all. And so I think below, sort of, you've got the three going for the title, and then you've got Man United somewhere there in the middle, and they might be rubbish and they might be all right. And then I think us, West Ham and Leicester are sort of fairly similar to each other. There was, I think, a bit of an overreaction to our first few games of the season. I think the games since haven't always been good, but there's been enough there that if I'm being optimistic about it, I think we can, you know, win more games than we lose, at least, which wasn't the case for a lot of last season and the season before. I think, yeah, there are similarities. I think Leicester are a better, like, more aesthetically pleasing football team to watch than Arsenal for now. But yeah, you do two young squads, both with their aging centre forward, trying to carry them to wins. And both teams want to have the ball. Both teams probably have been disappointed in on the grand scheme of things the last couple of years. I mean, Leicester have done well, but like you say, then at the end of both seasons have sort of thrown away the chance to be in the Champions League. So yeah, I think this is a real sort of even game, and I think the results of between the two teams the last couple of years when we've played them have pretty much been like that as well. But I'm not confident going into this.
You're not confident, or you're not confident?
I'm not confident.
Right.
I wouldn't say I'm confident.
Sure, I get where you're coming from completely. I mean, they did rest some players during the week. You know, they rotated a bit for their EFL Cup game. They drew with Brighton but went through on penalties, where, you know, we also were able to rotate. Aubameyang didn't play, Partey didn't play, Saka didn't play. Who else am I thinking of? Gabriel didn't play, Tomiyasu didn't play, Ramsdale didn't play, Tavares didn't play. We assume that he's going to be in the team if Kieran Tierney is not going to be fit. Mikel Arteta, he's quite tight-lipped on injuries and potential injuries. He does not want to give anything away at all in his press conferences. You know, I've noticed that, and Andrew Allen said this to me, you know, the injury updates that used to appear on the official website don't appear, or haven't appeared, you know, for the last couple of weeks. Now, I'm not sure if that is because they're keeping things very close to their chest, or if there's a lot going on in the background with regards to the website and the people that are running it. You know, there hasn't been a breakdown from Adrian Clark for quite some time. And, you know, that says to me that there might be some things going on in the background with regards to the website that we don't know about. But Arteta won't say, like, with Tierney, we don't know if he's going to play or not. He says, look, we'll keep an eye on him. But I suspected that the selection of Kolasinac in midweek was because they had very, very serious doubts over Tierney. So they didn't want to risk Tavares, because then you're having to play Kolasinac in a game that actually really matters. And I think that's one of these. So, you know, there are players who are going to come back into this Arsenal team who are going to be fresh, who are going to be ready to play. I mean, even Lacazette only came on as a sub. Lokonga came on sub, you know. So
I was about to say, I think that's probably the reason he obviously went off, I think, with a bit of cramp last Friday. I think it's probably the reason Lacazette didn't start as well, like Tavares, because he's already sort of posted in to be in the lineup on Saturday.
So, I mean, when we go into this game, I know we had midweek action, but we're going into this game, I suppose, with the Villa performance and the attitude and the commitment and the energy and all of the things that were good about the Villa performance. We're looking for more of that from the game when we play Leicester tomorrow. You know, and I think it's easy to go into it with that perspective, but I think we have to go back a bit and remember that we were looking for something like that against Palace as well and didn't get it. And this is where we start to see now, can we do this on a consistent basis? Are we capable of playing, if not necessarily that well every week, but with that kind of energy and that panache and that commitment and that, you know, those things? It's not always going to come off, but I think those are the things that you can be in control of more than anything else.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a like just a matter of intent. I think that was what was missing after we'd gone 1-0 up against Crystal Palace. And you know, we've become a team that I think is scared of losing a little bit, and we you know, or scared of being humiliated or throwing things away. So we take the lead, then we sit back, and it was really refreshing. That the two performances that have been good this that have really been good this season were against Spurs and against Aston Villa, and we've, you know, gone ahead fairly early in those games, and then just put our foot down and kept going at them. Though both those games have also, I don't feel like it's a coincidence that Emile Smith Rowe has been on the left in both of those games. You have this extra, he just accelerates play so much, and when you have that in combination with this, you know, if it's Tierney, if it's Tavares, this flying left wing back outside of him, I think that's really, really difficult for teams to defend. I also don't think it's an accident necessarily, and I'm sure some people won't like that or disagree with me thinking that, but in both of those games Bukayo Saka has played on the right and Nicolas Pepe hasn't played, and I think it's a matter of making decisions quickly and not taking too many touches. And I think the thing that Arsenal, and we think back to when we all loved watching Arsenal most weeks, and it was all of that combination play. And I think that's probably Pepe's biggest weakness, is just popping passes off and one touch, two touch. You know, the player comes outside him and Lacazette's there and it's one touch to him, one touch out. And, you know, just these little triangles working the way around opposition defenders like that, pulling people out of spaces like that. Pepe does very, very few things with just one or two touches. Yeah. And that's something that Saka and Smith Rowe as well are both really good at, and Lacazette, to be fair. So I think it's not an accident that Smith Rowe's been on the left and drifting in and giving that space to the player at left back in our two really good performances of the season, and also that Saka's been there combining on the right hand side.
Well, I mean, that's it. I think we've spoken about this before, the apparent, not incompatibility, but not 100% compatibility between Pepe and Mikel Arteta, and the way that we assume Mikel Arteta wants his team to play, because I think we're still a little bit in the dark in that sense. But like you say, you can see when Saka plays on the right-hand side, there is a difference. When Smith Rowe plays on the left-hand side, there is a difference. I mean, James, I think, said this on the Arsecast Extra on Monday, that, you know, he's 27 now, Pepe. This is who he is. This is the way he's going to play. If there were going to be signs that he was going to develop into a player who could be a bit more efficient, he wants lots of touches of the ball, doesn't he? And so many of those touches allow the defenders to get back in and get themselves organized, to get behind the ball, etc., etc. I think he's always going to be that kind of player. And while there are going to be games where I think he's useful and there are going to be moments, I think when he produces and is capable of producing really excellent stuff, it's increasingly difficult to see him being the starting guy on the right-hand side when Saka does it, and does it a little bit better.
Yeah, I think we're a team that, you know, Tim Stillman speaks really well and has done for a while now about Mikel Arteta having this rigid structure, and then you need a player to sort of break free of the structure in order to make things happen and to make a difference and surprise the opposition. I see Pepe similarly, in the we play really slow a lot of the time, and I don't think he speeds us up when the ball goes to him and when he's playing. And I think Saka and Smith Rowe in particular are constantly speeding Arsenal up and speeding up whatever we're doing on the ball and make us play quicker football, which is just really, really threatening. Martinelli is less efficient, and definitely we saw him midweek, not as good at combining as those two players, and you need to. And I think that may be the one big thing holding him back from getting more minutes at the moment, is the amount of times he's on the ball and his head is down and there is an option, but his head's down and he at least has that sort of energy about him, that, you know, it's constantly foot down on the accelerator. Nicolas Pepe, yeah, it doesn't quite have that. There's something a bit more laid back in his body language or his approach, and something a little bit more, I wouldn't say considered, but he wants time on the ball. He wants to take those two or three or four or five touches and almost bait the defender in before trying to beat him. And when when so many of our players or so much of our play is so slow, we don't really have the time for somebody to also be doing that when we do finally get the ball into the final third.
Yeah, I did maybe want to touch on Leicester's danger man. And we know the obvious one is Jamie Vardy, and we know the problems he's caused us. But if you were to pick somebody else from this Leicester side that Arsenal need to keep quiet, I suppose there'll be eyes on James Maddison, considering the stories that were doing the rounds during the summer, which, you know, I think turned out to be more agent talk than actual realistic interest from Arsenal. But those two aside, is there anyone else that you think we need to take care of?
I think Yuri Tillemans is a brilliant player. He's got, you know,
scored some goals
the last
he?
Few weeks. Yeah, with those goals against Brentford and United, he's obviously got a little bit more attention the last few weeks. But I think he's a really, really smart midfielder. Really, really good on the ball. Good at finding space and then using it to find a player further ahead of him. And I think, you know, he scored four goals in one Europa League game recently. And if Vardy isn't fully fit, Patson Daka is a player that is going to cause a lot of defenders a lot of nightmares over the next few years in the Premier League. And I don't think he'll be at Leicester for a very long time, personally. I think he's absolutely electric.
I mean, you've seen quite a bit of him.
He replaced Erling Haaland at Salzburg and sort of basically had a similar goal record to Haaland after taking his place in the team. So a big move was always on the cards over the last year or two. The first time I saw him for Leicester was in the Community Shield, and he came off the bench, and Chelsea just... It reminded me a little bit of when Anelka arrived in England, and you see defenders talk about Anelka arriving and it's like they'd never seen anything like it. He was just so quick. Nobody in England had ever seen anything like him. Daka has a little bit of that about him, I think, just the willingness to constantly be on the move and the raw pace that he has. And, you know, he obviously has an eye for goal as well. Four in one Europa League games, not to be sniffed at.
Not at all. Okay, well, look, let's hope we can keep them relatively quiet. Well, completely quiet. Somewhere between completely and absolutely quiet would satisfy me when we play Leicester tomorrow morning. We'll leave it there for now, though. Fingers crossed for a good result. Lewis, thank you very much indeed, as always.
Thanks, Andrew. Have a nice weekend.
You too. Of course, it's dependent on what Arsenal do, so hopefully we all have a very nice weekend. James and I will be here on Monday with an Arscast Extra, looking back on whatever happens at the King Power. Fingers crossed for a good result, 3 points, and we will catch you on the next one.